All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Right out of the gate today, we got a little something to announce, something fun coming up. As a station later on this month, you guys know, we've been doing the mock draft sounder. Right, we've been doing that for, I don't know, 3 weeks now. There's a reason.
It is draft season.
It's draft season. There's a lot of buildup for the NFL draft. And something that we've done over the last couple of years has been a ton of fun with all of you is our draft party. Up at the Landing later on this month for another draft party. Bink and Chris Unocero will be broadcasting live, kicking off our coverage. So we're very excited for that. That's going to be going on later on this month at the Landing in Liberty. That's Thursday night on April 24th. So a couple Thursdays from now, April 24th at the Landing in Liberty. It'll all start at 6 o'clock. As I said, Bink and Chris Unocero will be broadcasting live. And the draft contest is also back. We've upped our ante. You know, we're on 96.5 The Fan now.
You know this works.
So instead of $610, no, $965 plus an autographed Juwan Taylor helmet as the prize.
That's a pretty good price. That's a 33% increase from last year's prize. As a reminder, you know, inflation goes to pricing too, right? Congratulations. We said $9.65 heroes is the way we look at it on the show now. $965 is what we're willing to offer in exchange for the draft party. This has obviously been a big event. It is very popular. There's always a lot of people in the bar. We get a chance to interact with all of you throughout the first round of the NFL draft and give you a chance to win nearly a grand and an autographed Juwan Taylor helmet. Feels like a pretty easy way to spend opening first round of the NFL draft. So yeah, come see us at the Landing again. You know when the draft is, the Thursday night of the draft. That's when we'll be doing the event. I don't think you can like pre-schedule a table or anything like that.
No, Thursday, April 24th, the entire 96.5 The Fan staff going to be up there as well. If you guys are there last year, or the year before, you know, that is always a packed crowd. You definitely do want to get there early because that place fills up very, very quickly.
It does.
But the contest, $965 to the winner, plus an autographed Juwan Taylor helmet. If you're wondering, well, what's the contest? Well, more details when we get closer. But basically, right, you get a point if you get the player correct in the first round, 3 points if you get the player on the right team. And we'll have some sheets that will have to be turned in before the team that has the number one overall pick is on the clock, which right now would be the Tennessee Titans, unless they trade out of the number one
overall
pick.
I'm going Cam Ward. I'm trying to get 4 points out the gate. I'm thinking they're taking a quarterback. Also, you don't have to fill it out until closer to the draft when you'll know.
Everybody should be guaranteed, you know, 4 points right out of the gate, right? 1 point for the player drafted, and then 3 points if you get the right player. You should be able to get a couple points right out of the gate. So hope to see you guys.
Nobody got Desmond, or no one got the Falcons quarterback.
Michael Penix. I don't think so.
Almost called him Desmond. That's way back.
Some people did a really good job with it though. So hope to see you guys out at the Landing in Liberty for the fans draft party Thursday, April the 24th. Meanwhile, the Royals in the middle of their first road swing of the season, they get a win yesterday. You heard it right here yesterday afternoon, here on 96.5 The Fan. And you needed that. You needed that. The Brewers just got beat up again. Maybe it wasn't just the torpedo bats the Yankees were doing. Maybe the Brewers
are
pitching
the worst team
sucks.
In baseball.
Their pitching might just stink. The Royals jumped on them 4 runs right away. Right away, got 4 runs and controlled that entire game. As much as we can talk about the offense and how great that looked, Chris Bubich is the most positive thing to come out of yesterday. It's not even close. He makes his first start. He's back in the rotation. We know how effective he was in the pen last year for this team. But for him to go out and shove the way he did, he's the first pitcher in this very early portion of the year to give you 6 innings, too.
To get you a quality start. It was better than a quality start, but a quality start.
But we said, you know, the Reagans and Lugo, who will be fine, but they had a grind just to get 5. Chris Bubich was dominant, struck out the side in the very first inning, set the tone for the entire game. And that was a huge positive. Even if you think there's an innings limitation coming later on in the season for him, he's one of the swing players. We mentioned on opening day, we were at Kauffman last Thursday. We mentioned, hey, Melendez could be a swing player, good or bad for this team. Chris Bubich, could he elevate this team if all of a sudden he turns out to be a reliable starter, knowing that you traded away Brady Singer? It's one start. But you got to love the early, early signs of what Chris Bubich might be in this rotation.
I think this was the best possible way to start the year. I talk about this all the time, and I don't think it is understated. I think players don't want to think it's all of a sudden this key factor. Starting well as a team, as a player, and everything else can make the wheels of motion so much smoother. Because Waka and Lugo and Reagans got off to a rocky start. it needed to be like, hey, let's feel like, and I mentioned yesterday, last year, the 4 and 5 starters in Alec Marsh and Brady Singer, there was arguments for a huge chunk of the season. They were pitching like threes. And if you had like a 1-2-3-3-3, you know, all of a sudden you felt like you had a rotation that was so deep because you had three guys in there who could all handle the job, do the job every single day. I have high hopes for Chris Bubich this season. He was mixing it up. He was striking out bad. And look, the Brewers are striking out a lot. So he didn't strike out a disproportionately high number, considering how bad their offense and team might just be. But he struck out a ton of batters. It was efficient. It was easy. A couple of walks or hit by pitch was the only trouble he really got in throughout the game. And yeah, it was the most positive sign out of there, because you and I agree going into the year that there's going to be at least a small amount of regression from the numbers and stats and innings put up between those three guys, which means somebody like Chris Bubich and Michael Lorenzen, who goes tonight, or the other guys who mentioned, Kyle Wright, whoever, somebody was going to need to have a better year than they did last year in order to make up the difference. Bubich was excellent. That's as good as he's looked, right? I mean, I know we watched, like, we can get to the India thing. I know we watched Brady Singer look really good yesterday too, but like, you needed Chris Bubich to be like, well, we let a starting pitcher go. Can you recover from it? Yeah, it was no problem yesterday.
And honestly, whether it's just Bubich or it's Mike Lorenzen, who was really good for the Royals last year, if you can get Chris Bubich to give you, you know, that I don't know, I'll call it 80% of what Brady Singer was, 85% of what Brady Singer was, that's a massive win. The fact that you were able to trade him away and still replace that. It's one outing, just like we say on the negative stuff. Let's not overreact. I don't want to overreact to one star from Chris Bubich.
And he had a nice early lead and it was comfortable. I think the Texans would be a little too harsh saying he can't pitch under pressure, but he had a comfortable lead, or maybe they're talking about Singer. Either way, they both had a comfortable lead and didn't have to pitch from behind the entire game.
Yeah, but you go out there and you pitch in the situation that you're presented. And he, in this situation, last night, yesterday afternoon, in Milwaukee, Chris Bubich looked as good as you could possibly ask for, and set the, hopefully kind of gets the rotation going, right? Because it's not even one time through the rotation yet, but you were probably disappointed a little bit what you had from Reagans and Lugo in their first two outings. And so then now you should be on the flip side of that. You should be excited and maybe pleasantly surprised what you got out of Chris Bubich. Let's see what Michael Lorenzen does tonight. Could set up the Royals for a possibility to
just get a series win tonight.
Guarantee a series win. And then you're talking tomorrow maybe about a sweep. They, by the way, we'll have a day game tomorrow as well, but tonight it's an evening game. So yeah, I love what you saw from the pitching across the board yesterday. And then, yeah, on the hitting end too, I mean, for those that were a little, I don't know, worried, or just, we would get some texts about Bobby Wood Jr. Well, yesterday he came up with, at the time, it seemed like a very big hit. I know they ended up winning very comfortable margin, but
yeah, they did. Well, but we didn't know that. Like you said, in the early going, you were just trying to scratch across some runs and make sure you were comfortable. And that at least leads into the rest of that category. So you got to feel pretty good about where those things are. Little news, by the way, is the NFL continues to monitor stuff, and we'll talk about it throughout the day. The NFL did officially announce they will continue playing games on Christmas, which we knew.
Yeah.
But because it's a Thursday this year, it will be a Christmas Day triple header.
Yep.
So if you think there's a chance the Chiefs are going to play on Christmas today, Christmas again. Yeah, probably.
I don't think they'll get them Christmas back-to-back years. They'll just have them on a different premium day.
Now, in fairness, they've totally sold out to the corporate partners in this one. The first two games will be on Netflix. The night game will be on Amazon Prime. Full streaming partners.
Yeah, but this is not a...
it's fine.
Go back and... Honestly, go back the day after, or the first show after we had the Christmas Day games, when everybody looked at the calendar for this 2025 season, everybody said we were going to get a triple header. I mean, this is not surprising, because last year was on a Wednesday, and we know that Amazon typically gets the Thursday night game. So this makes sense. This is not surprising. The question is, are we still, and I'm sure we will, you know, you look at now the premium dates. So you're going to have a triple header on Christmas. You're going to have Thanksgiving football with two games.
Three, I think, usually two, on Thanksgiving.
Two now, because they do the, is it three or two? Because they do the Black Friday game.
They do four between those. They've kept the evening game on Thanksgiving. They do the normal.
CBS, Fox, and NBC.
The 11, the 2, and then the evening game at 7. And then they do the Black Friday game. Wait till they put two on that game. The only complaint I would have is, putting more games on these like Thursdays, putting more into that Thanksgiving week, it's going to wreck the Sunday slate to the point it's going to be borderline unwatchable a couple of times. You're like, I don't even care about this.
It
Sunday
is later
slate.
In the year. Like, someone says they already put the Chiefs on Christmas back-to-back years. Are they going to put them on three straight?
It is back-to-back already. Yeah. Are they going to do it a third time? Maybe. It's the Chiefs, man. Come on, man. You and I both knew that they will put them on every channel in every time slot available if it is a choice. Black Friday, Thanksgiving, Christmas. They haven't put them on Thanksgiving in a while, so it's probably Thanksgiving night game this year.
Well, they play Dallas. They play in Dallas this year. The debate is whether or not they save that because they know the Chiefs can get a good rating no matter when they play the Cowboys. Yeah. And do they need it? Thanksgiving, it's Cowboys Giants, and they get good ratings. So do they? That's the question we'll find out and the answer to in May. Do they feel the need to do that? I understand they're like, hey, put them on Christmas for a third straight year. I wonder if they don't put them on Christmas for a third straight year, that means they're back on like Black Friday again or some other premium day in the calendar for the NFL schedule. Or, hey, look, the Chiefs didn't win the Super Bowl last year. Make the Eagles do a bunch of that crap. But the Eagles, you won the Super Bowl.
It would be nice. The Chiefs were back-to-back Super Bowl champions, so that's why they had to play on every day that wasn't named Tuesday last year. So it would be nice if they spread that burden to a different team, player, whatever, would certainly be good. Whether they do it or not, I don't know.
At least if you just look at the timing and the way the calendar works this year, you're not talking about the turnaround from playing Saturday and then Wednesday like they had this past year. Remember, they played Saturday game against the Texans, if I'm not mistaken, and then they played against the Steelers on Christmas on a Wednesday. This year, Christmas is on a Thursday, so you could play Saturday and then Thursday or Sunday and Thursday, and that's nothing that unusual. We see that happen. Teams play Sunday and then Thursday already. So at least Christmas, because of the way the calendar falls, is on a Thursday. It's not the really short week that screwed you over last year.
No, yeah, you didn't have to like change your entire life around. Where the Saturday to Wednesday shift is the same as the Sunday through Thursday, you would hope the same thing applies because it's on Christmas. You would get some of those teams on Saturday, then they'd get 5 days rest instead of the normal Thursday 4 days rest situation, which we can get into in just a minute. I know that the NFL is looking at that too, and they're going to make it like shorter timeline in order to progress and change those rules, which is a whole other thing.
Got to be careful what you see on social media today, man. Have you gotten caught yet, Drew? Anybody? You got to be careful today. It's April Fool's Day.
Tiger Woods tried to get everybody earlier.
Did he? What was his whole thing?
He said magically the treatment he had been having for his Achilles tendon was so good that he's able to play in the Masters next weekend.
Yeah.
And then, of course, afterwards said, ha ha ha, only kidding. Yeah.
I'm torn on the April Fool's stuff. I generally, as a philosophy, don't believe in telling people not to like the things they like, right? You're interested in a different hobby than me. It is okay to have a different hobby than me. I don't need to knock your hobby just because I'm not into it. April Fool's Day. My issue with it is, y'all ain't funny. It's crazy. If you were better at these jokes, I'd be on board. But you stink at them.
It screams you're dad bad, joke.
Yeah, but it's like, but worse.
It's if
like
you're
dad
a kid,
joke that's
I think
not
it's
thought out or contrived. It's just like, I don't like it.
I think if you're a kid in elementary school or whatever, right? Like, I know my nephews were excited about, they were trying to come up with what to do for April Fool's Day. Like what they were allowed to do with that didn't cross a line or whatever. And that, like, I think if you're a kid, have fun with it, right?
Put a kick me sign on the back of your parent or whatever, or a honk if what, you know, like, yeah. Have whatever, right? Like the classic little, like, normal whatever.
But today, if you see anything on social media, just a reminder again, that's like a little like, huh, is that, just remember what today is and then just double and triple check, you know?
No, I haven't gotten got yet, I guess. Could happen. You and I do.
Like, if you see today that the Chiefs are playing 4 international games, that's, just calm down.
As soon as I saw Tiger's tweet, I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to be on today. I'm just going to be off.
Look, and Tiger's making a joke in the sense that, like, everybody knows it's
his
a joke.
Own health. Yeah,
yeah. There's
right?
No way.
But it's not a funny joke. Mm-hmm. I'll be playing in a mess. Like, oh, you got us, Tiger. You don't have to tell corny ass April Fool's joke.
See the Chiefs' social post today. Their attempt at it.
Theirs was not bad.
So
again, if you're funny with it, I'll allow it.
The Chiefs made a post that said the boys are back together once again, and it's a photo of Brett Veach and Clark Hunt and Andy Reid and Mark Donovan all together. But if you look at the photo, Andy Reid's mustache is gone.
Oh, no.
So,
it's like the Pringles commercial.
That's right. That's exactly
bad. That's
right.
Okay.
So that's decent, you know. And some people in the comments didn't get it right away.
There is one big national personality who fell for the Tiger Woods thing.
Who?
Fell for it for real?
No.
By who?
They commented, awesome, good luck, Tiger.
Who?
Jason Whitlock.
Oh, well, that explains a lot. But anyway, that explains. You could have just
former employee.
That's right. Yeah, of this. Well, not this
you
version
asked
of the station.
Who it was.
No, I was curious. I didn't know. I thought it was like a golf writer or something,
not just random fringe person.
No. So
random fringe.
I told myself before.
Such a great way to describe Whitlock now. Good stuff.
Yeah, there's a national personality.
Just pay attention. All Gold is saying is...
Look at the date at the bottom of the tweet, you know?
Pay attention because it is April 1st. My kids will probably... My son for like a month has convinced he was going to like make a card that Glitter shot out of. And I'm like, well, I'm not helping you make that.
How is that possible?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that they, you know, they do those like Glitter bombs. I'm sure that that's... But how? What his plan was, I don't know. Maybe just put glitter in a card and then blow it in your face. It's hard to say. He has not since said that this morning, so we'll see.
I think my nephew wanted to pour a bucket of water on his dad, and my my sister, his mom, was like, "Yeah, that's probably not a great idea in the morning when your dad's getting up for getting ready for work and getting up for work. Probably not a great idea to just pour a giant bucket of water on his head. Probably not going to go over very well.
It's not going to, I mean, I wouldn't get like mad at my kid, but I'd also be like, what the hell is happening? Yeah. Also, I wake up first. They're not getting me.
Yeah.
I'm the first person to wake up in that.
No, I think it was going to be like, as he's already dressed for work and stuff.
That's worse.
Have been a mess.
That's, that ain't great. Can you get him later? Like when he's home?
I don't know.
Like at least for kids.
I think
like,
that idea got shot down.
Yeah. Again, if you're funny with it, I don't have a problem, but I feel like there's a lot of very unfunny jokes to go with it. You'd mentioned the draft party to start the show. Don't forget, we'll be out at the landing for the first round of the NFL draft with your chance to win $965 and a signed Jawan Taylor helmet. But when we look at what the draft is inside this month, we're actually in the month finally because it's April 1st. The draft is this month. I was thinking about the free agency period's dead. You and I agree, Gold. It's like it's as dead as it's going to be, right? Whoever they sign left isn't coming from some major. So what do we expect now? Do we think it's going to be a more offensive heavy draft, defensive heavy draft, or balanced? Typically, I will say historically, balanced has not been what the draft has been for the Chiefs. They typically go all in on one side or the other. Not zero times it was that case, but the draft picks, if you look at it by a year-by-year basis, the Chiefs typically go all offense or all defense. I'm not saying like 100%, but like a huge majority of it. At this point, I got to kind of assume they're going to go. I had always kind of leaned offense because I feel like they want to get back to that score. They've done more on offense because they've signed a guard. Well, they haven't signed a guard. They brought back Caliendo. They have signed a left tackle. They have brought an additional running back. They have brought back Hollywood Brown. They've done more on offense. And yet, I still think it's going to be more on the offensive side of the ball. And they ride out one more Steve Spagnuolo year with Chris Jones and Karlaftis. And everybody else, and Minnehue, and all the guys they got back, and they just see, we can got one more year of a top five defense before we got to fix it.
So I think when the season ended, it was, hey, this is now a year you've got to just completely put more resources in on offense because you spent the last couple of years going heavy on the defensive side of the ball. But then I look, okay, they brought back a Minnehue, they brought in Christian Fulton. So is there the pressing need at corner for a top pick? No. Do they still need a draft one? I think so because they don't have many guys under contract. The way they've approached the offseason tells me that they can kind of set themselves up to go either way, you know, versus when the season ended post Super Bowl, it seemed very evident. Like they needed to go, you know, at that time they only had 6 draft picks. They now have 8, I think. At the time it felt like, oh, they got to go use, you know, 5 or their 6 on offense. Now, I don't know, out of the 8, I don't know. Is it for the 8 picks, is it 2 of their first 4 picks need to be on offense? I feel like the way they've addressed the offseason, I don't know if I feel the same way of like, hey, I want all 3 of their first 3 picks.
So maybe for the first time it's balanced.
Yeah.
Because last year, 5 of 7 were on offense. The year before, 6 of 7 were on defense. The year before that, they only took 2 offensive players of 9 selections. So 7 out of 9 were on defense. The last time they had a balanced draft in a nearly equal number was 2021, where it just went like every other. Bolden Creed, Kando Gray, Powell, and Smith. They essentially just took turns, and even that still is slightly heavier in favor of offense. So, like, they typically go one or the other. And I'm not, like, and I'm not talking, like, a large majority. 4 to 3, like, how many picks you say they've got now? 8?
I think it's 8.
So, if it went anything 5 to 3 or 4 to 4, I consider balanced. If they go anything outside of that, 6-2, we are talking about an imbalance in the way that they're drafting. Certainly 7-1 or 8-0. But, like, I
kind more of importantly, like I think, though, offense. It's the... Of the, what is it, 3 picks in the top 100 they have this year because of the trade for with L'Jarius Sneed and the Titans. how do you think the first four, and truly the picks, I know they've drafted well late, but the picks that are likely to have a direct impact immediately, first three, first four rounds.
I think an offensive lineman is
how many of those are going to be offense versus defense? That's what I think we can narrow it down to. I think in the first 3 to 4 picks, I will be stunned if one's not a defensive lineman and one's not an offensive lineman, whether you think it's tackle or guard. So that's even. Then the question is, do they go
that? I don't know.
Do they go running back? Do they go wide receiver? They corner. Say, no, we're going to go. Yeah, we're going to go draft another defensive lineman in a corner and just go heavy. That's, I think we're right on the offensive line, defensive line. But after that, with the other two picks in the first four rounds, what do they do?
I think this would be a good year for balance. I think that they are equally competent on either side of the ball, but that they need help on both sides of the ball. If there's a year to go balance, and it, again, in Brett Veach's draft history, it's like one time, two times, maybe he has gone more with a balanced approach versus it seemed like it just was trying to fix one side of the ball. But you and I both agree, in previous years, last year when they went offensive heavy, they needed to fix the offensive side of the ball, so that's what they were trying to do. But you know this, ignore defense long enough in the draft, and how, like, eventually you're going to have to fix that whole thing. And it seems like that's the cycle they go through. Fix the defense, wait a couple of years. All draft picks on defense, fix it that way. Wait a couple of years, keep trying to fix the offense. Then it's a fix the defense draft. Like, they tend to just go in spurts rather than what if we took a couple from each side of the ball. And I'm sure some of that is, and they'll tell you, they don't go into the draft thinking right about it that way. And instead it plays out in a way, or the talent level at the positions and everything kind of in between kind of drives it that direction. But still, it seems interesting.
913-586-7965, Jay Southland, Toe Service text line. From the 913, someone said, hey, if they draft wide receiver early, we will know what they think the suspension will be for Rice and potentially Worthy.
Yeah, I don't know if they have any idea.
Yeah, I mean, we've all for the last year speculated 4 games, 6 games, whatever it's going to be for Rice. Remember, at this present moment, there is not any clarification on the legal situation for Rice. And if there is no clarity by training camp, there's a chance that he doesn't get suspended next year, and it could be even further down the road. I, you know, you and I have been consistent on, hey, if you're the league, whether it's Worthy, I mean, whether it's Rice, I'm sorry, or whether it's a player on any other team, if you can't make a determination on a multi-game suspension by X date, you know, August 15th or whatever, then you should not be able to all of a sudden do it in the middle of the season. And
yeah, I
feel that way for whether it's a Philadelphia Eagle, a Buffalo Bill, or a Kansas City Chief. So we'll see. I don't know if the how they draft wide receiver will tell us what they think. Now, if they get clarity on it before the draft, yeah. But I don't think they're going to have clarity by April 24th on what the potential suspension is. We asked Brett Veach when he joined us, I guess it's been a month at this point, maybe, mm-hmm. on the show. I'm like, hey, have you heard anything from the league? And he was like, we really haven't, you know, but they're well aware of the potential. I think if you think he's Rice is going to miss the first 4 games, let's say. So you go into week one with Worthy, Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster.
You can live. You don't need
Travis
it the same
Kelce.
Way we did last year.
You know, I still don't think you all of a sudden reach and draft a wide receiver in round one because of it. I think they should draft a receiver in this year's draft. Do I think it has to be with one of the first two picks? No.
No, I don't think so at all. I'd like it before round 7. Right, so that they have right. the potential of actually finding a guy who's going
to contribute. You don't want Mr. Irrelevant to be a wide receiver?
Look, unless they're going to find Cooper Kupp in the 5th, no. Mm-hmm. I don't want them just taking it necessarily in the late because I want the better chances of doing it. I was thinking more about, like, we had a big discussion yesterday, and it continues to be a discussion in baseball about the torpedo bat. I saw Ellie De La Cruz.
Two homers last night.
Was he using the bat before?
He was yesterday, but I don't know if he was like a day or two before.
That's
the
question.
A couple of the sports books now have categories, like on DraftKings. They actually have a torpedo bat category. It lists all the anybody they know that are using the torpedo bat and odds to hit home runs today.
That's fun. Parlay, a torpedo bat parlay. Eric Hosmer made a really good point on his podcast on Moonball Media where I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if it went this way? The way he described it and the way that I thought it was probably most interesting as a result of this is he gets on his podcast and he said, what if what's going to happen here with the torpedo bat is not that everybody in the league is going to use it, but instead what it turns into, Gold, is there's a guy in the dugout who's a caddy. And what it is like you need different bats depending on spin rate, the way they pitch inside, the way it cuts inside, lefties versus righties. And there's just a guy with your bag of bats being like, hold on, I got the right stick for you. You need the 9-iron here. I got you.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's going to do it. And instead, these bats turn into this like fundamental shift of did I choose the right bat at the right moment barrel? And it turns into like a golf caddy situation. I actually think that that'd be a fun way for this to develop where they allow these bats to happen. And these players who do it really well learn that different bats are better for different circumstances.
He might not be wrong that it heads that direction. It's fascinating. We said this yesterday, the entire story around these torpedo bats, I'm fascinated by it. My only first reaction to Hosmer saying that, could we get to a point that you basically have a caddy in the dugout and you change bats, is it sure sounds like a lot of overthinking. And what do we hear sometimes with guys in the sport in particular, right? So much of the game is mental, right? And you overthink things and you can't let one day change your entire philosophy at the plate. And so if you're someone, pick a Royals player, you know, that's struggling at the plate in the middle of an 0-for-18 stretch, there, are you overthinking it by, man, I got, now, well, this bat got changed. This bat.
They're already thinking that hard anyway.
But that's what I'm saying. Know? Like, does it just get to an absurd point? I think it's an interesting thought from Haas, but I just wonder, does that get to be just way, you are, just go out and play some baseball. Are you overthinking the crap out of this thing at that point?
I know, but there's so much more information, and the information has obviously helped pitchers. If you're a batter, why not do it? The pitching part of it, this location, the velocity, like all this stuff that has helped pitchers make it harder for people to hit. I don't know why you wouldn't want that information. And if it says it cuts inside, no, look, the pitcher's going to have that same information.
I'm just imagining on Vern's postgame show, you know, Brian calls in to Vern like, I told you he should have switched to this bat. I can't believe he chose to use this bat. I mean, can you imagine?
But it happens in golf, man. Caddy and the club work and all the stuff that goes with it. It matters.
So the caddies, are they going to be the nerdy MIT guy, or is it going to be a former big leaguer? Who's the caddy in this hypothetical?
It's definitely the numbers guy. It's definitely the guy who knows. Well, and I think everybody kind of works for themselves, right? You get the scouting report. These players sit in a meeting, and they tell you about the starting pitcher, and they tell you about the bullpen arms. They tell you this starting pitcher cuts in against the hands against right-handed hitters. And if he cuts in against the hands against right-handed hitters, people get jammed a lot. If we're getting jammed a lot, we're doing torpedo bat. For you those have to of use you the who
same
are comfortable.
You have to use the same bat the whole at bat. I don't want guys to 3-2 count. They're like, ump, and they go back and they grab a different bat for a 3-2 count.
No. I think, you want to choke up? You're like, switch me out? Now we're getting two. That's way too
That's what I'm saying. I don't want it to get to that point.
Just one thing away, you know?
All right, up next, though, here on Cody and Gold, we're just getting started. Let's talk about what has happened with a couple of key sports figures recently over the last couple of years in Kansas City, and could it happen for another? We'll explain what we mean by that next. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Here in about 8 minutes, we'll get into what the league being the NFL, decided to do today on a couple rule changes, and one that has been talked about, and now we know is going to be talked about at least for another month or two. That is the tush push. And where things stand with potentially banning that. That's coming up in just a bit. But we know yesterday we led the show with the news out of Sporting KC as Peter Vermees was let go after a wide range of success, to say the least, especially at the beginning of his tenure, winning an MLS Cup in 2013. Today they're going to have a press conference in the noon hour talking about their future plans for the organization and where they go from there. And you made the comparison a little bit to what happened yesterday, you thought, to Dane Moore as well.
I think it was very similar.
Another individual that meant so much for the city, brought a championship to the city as well. And then, hey, it was time, though, at the end.
And I know you're going to hate a question I was thinking about as it relates to that.
Who's going
to
hate?
But you are.
Me?
You personally are going to hate
this?
Because you're going to think it's a 0% chance, and it's not a 0% chance, in my opinion.
Okay.
All right. So Dayton fell on hard times at the end. He got let go.
Uh-huh.
He got fired. He didn't even remember. We thought it was going to be a mutually agreed to part ways, but they ended up using the word fired with Dayton, which was crazy. And then Peter Vermees mutually let go last year. And we were talking about college basketball, and I don't know why. I was sitting at the house last night, and I was like, what would it take for this to happen to Bill Self? What happened to Peter Vermees, and what happened to Dayton Moore? As in, you're a legend. Everyone loves you, that you have the history on your side. You got championship or ships in his case, right? He's got multiple in Bill Self. What would it take for Kansas to be like, okay, Bill, listen, we're good here? Because it's been 3 years since he advanced beyond the round of 32. And two of those times he's got knocked out in the round of 64. I don't think it's like close now, but I do think seriously, if this happened like three more years in a row where like he doesn't get out of the round of 32 and he misses one of those three in NCAA tournament, I think it'd be a little fire on his feet where they would try to be like, Bill, do you still want the job or would you like to sit on a beach and we'll figure somebody else out to do this? I don't think it's impossible for this same thing to happen to Bill Self. And I'll say one thing before, and I know I don't We'll see what you have to say. I don't want to guess your opinion. But I remember on this very show once we did a topic where we said, hey, who's going to last longer in their respective job, Dayton Moore or Brett Veach? And at the time, we both were like, Dayton Moore ain't never getting fired. He can stay in that job as long as he wants. And we thought that at the time because that felt so true at the time. So I kind of felt that way about Bill Self a lot of times probably during his Kansas tenure.
Yeah.
I think it'd have to go south in a hurry, but I think it would take 3 or 4 consecutive years of worse than the round of 32, and I think he'd have to miss a tournament. I think he'd have to miss an NCAA tournament.
So a couple things. One, he will get to go out on his own terms.
So you're saying it's not going to happen that way.
Yeah, you will get out. Here's why. And you can say, well, you could have said the same thing about Dayton Moore or whatever.
Yeah.
He will go out on his own terms because, for starters, we are the difference in Peter Vermees, while he was a coach, he was also a player development guy and basically almost part of the front office. Dayton Moore was a front office guy. I think it's a little bit different for a college basketball coach that has won 2 national championships, that is become kind of like a considers himself a steward of the Kansas basketball program and the history and understands the history and legacy. We're talking also about a program in terms of building versus a professional sport. I think there's a little bit difference in how that works. And I believe he would just retire and say, I'm done with the sport. Like if he finds out that the issues they've had in identifying talent through the portal, if it's just something that he's not good at, let's say that actually ends up happening and we're here 2 years from now and like the same mistakes keep being made and they still can't piece the right guys together. I think he would just say, this era. I'm not great at it, and he would just step away. I don't think it would ever get bad, and he would frankly ever let it get bad enough where he would be hanging on for dear life. I don't think he would do that. Like, is there on the Peter Vermees end? We were discussing this yesterday. Like, probably 2 or 3 years ago, should have been out. I don't think we'll get to a point where Bill Self, let's fast forward 3 years from now, we're like, man, he needs to go, and he doesn't recognize it. I actually believe he will recognize that if in fact he cannot get it, quote unquote, turned around. The other part of
then
it,
he'll just do the retirement thing. But you know, we're all kind of deep seated. Like if he's just bad for 4 years, then he's like, I'm hanging it up. We're all going to wonder a little if it didn't go down
like
this.
I also think it would take missing the NCAA tournament for back to back seasons or 2 seasons for that to happen.
You think more than one missed tournament? Yep. I think one would do it, but it would take like. Because if he gets to even a single Sweet 16 in the next 3-4 years, it doesn't matter.
We can get into like the semantics of the wording, mutually parting ways or being fired. I feel very, very confident. There's not a scenario that you will ever see the press release that says Bill Self fired from Kansas. I'm willing to bet. We can bet virtually anything.
There
will not be a press release. Barring some horrific, you know, like scandal, like I'm talking like the worst of the worst you could possibly think of for him, that you would ever see the headline Bill Self fired from Kansas. I'm sorry. That's
there's
not
a time
happening.
That I would have never thought that about Dayton is all I'm saying. Not for me. That's been coming for a few years.
Well, I wonder, I think the only comp that you can make regarding Bill Self is more towards like
it's just
Cal and what happened to Cal and what got him to the point where Kentucky, because he had a lifetime contract, basically what Bill said, he had a lifetime contract at Kentucky. And it turned into, if you look at the last 5 years, what they did before Mark Pope came in and Cal left, he missed the tournament 2 years in a row, and then it was first-round exit, second-round exit, first-round exit. That, to what you guys are saying, I think that's similar to what has to go on, where they got to miss the tournament. He can't get past the round of 32 in the next three. Like, he can't. If he gets to a Sweet 16, his job's totally fine. But if he gets eliminated early or misses the tournament,
I don't think he'd ever do the Cal thing. Then just, like, take a different job. He's signed a lifetime contract.
Not to say we knew Cal was going to take another job, but he basically had to resign. Like they said, oh, we're going to fire you. Gold, you're saying that you don't think it's ever going to get to that point where Kansas is going to say, look,
he would
you
just
need
stop.
To resign.
He would just stop coaching. He would just stop coaching if I got the point. I also think, you know, Dayton Moore did an incredible job. We're making the comp. Dayton Moore did an incredible job at what he did. But Dayton Moore, while in Royals history, he's going to certainly be the best general manager. Dayton Moore, if you were to just take a poll of people outside of the sport, and like fast forward 10 years from now, nobody's going to say Dayton Moore is the second or third best GM in baseball history. Bill Self, there's a case he's the third, maybe second. You know, like, he's a top five coach in the sports history. There's a little bit different. Like, Dayton Moore, great GM. He's not the best GM in baseball history.
No, but like, by the comparison of where they were and what he accomplished, he felt untouchable. I'm not comparing the accomplishments.
But I think it
Bill Self's accomplishments are far out.
And that's why I think the scenario would be different.
I think it would take more than it. Because Dayton only got like 5 years. Like Dayton got like 6 years after the World Series.
Yeah, like I just disagree.
He got even less time than Peter Vermees got post his most recent championship.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm being a homer at all. Someone says take your KU glasses off, Gold. One more year of what has happened the last 2 years. Anything is possible. Way. They won a national title. Like for a second, they won a national title 3 years ago. So let's act like you guys, some of you are acting like Kansas has been a 19-win team, bubble team for 3 straight years, and you've had enough. Like the standard is different. He set the bar, and it's not acceptable what they had this year. But the idea that Bill Self could lose in the first round again next year and that he should be fired is the most ludicrous take we've had on the text line in a while. That's not me being a KU homer. In fact, there's a lot of UKU fans out there, and I know that text is not from a KU fan. I can tell by the wording. A lot of KU fans are disagree with me on this. This is if I was being a KU fan, I would be saying it's not, I would be saying that he's got another year to figure it out. It's a lot of KU fans that actually had that take. I'm saying that the idea that he's getting fired in the next 2 or 3 years is asinine. Absolutely asinine.
I think it would take more than that. I think it would take 5 bad years and missing a tournament, you know, like were you 4 bad years where you keep not getting out of the round of 64 or 32 and you miss a tournament as a portion of that. I think it would take a lot. I was just like, the way I was thinking about it with Vermees and Dayton, I'm like, those Vermees probably, it's been a number of years now, right? Probably after all those open cups in the MLS, there was probably a time that he felt kind of untouchable. All the rumors then were like, he was going to go be the coach. He should become the coach of the U.S. men's national team. And all the stuff that was around Vermees at the time. But there was definitely a time that I thought Dayton Moore was going to be untouchable. They were the worst franchise in baseball, and he took them to a World Series title. I'm like, man, that man is never leaving that job. And look, it takes things going south and south.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's going to coach for another 8 years. I'm saying that he would just retire. He would not be, he's not getting fired.
If they're talking about what's more likely, I think he certainly is. The more likely thing is that he's just tired of everything and would end up leaving more than him actually getting fired. I mean, we're not going to do the how many more years does Bill Self have conversation, but I think that he's more likely to just be done with it.
62.
I think he's more likely to be done with it for sure than actually try to coach his way all the way.
Like Dan Hurley's won back-to-back titles. Obviously, this year they win. But like, if Dan Hurley and UConn missed the tournament for 3 straight years, you guys think he should be fired?
No.
Okay, neither do I. I'm just checking for the text line.
Oh, it was like,
somebody said that.
But I also didn't say he should be fired if he misses the tournament next year. We're going to get out of the round of 32.
I'm just saying, though, by some of the logic of some of the stuff, it's like it's crazy. The first time that they weren't a 4 seed. Oh, or worse than a 4 seed. I'm sorry, and we're like, oh my gosh. Well, if he does it again, you know, it's crazy. And look, as a KU alum, of course the fan base is spoiled. No kidding.
Yeah, it should be.
But and I just he's positioned himself with the career he has had that he will get to go on his own terms. And I understand what you're trying to say, Cody. Of like, we would have said that about Dayton, and I'm with you. We would have said about Ned and all that. And Ned did go out on his own terms, by the way. Ned Yost did.
He did. He almost didn't in 2014, but he did eventually go out on his own terms. I do think the age thing is really funny because people are like, well, he's 62 and all that other stuff. Like, this was the year of the old coach. Are you kidding? Rick Pitino, Izzo, Barnes, Sampson. Like, there were a bunch of teams that like won some games in the NCAA tournament with older coaches.
They were also a lot older
than Self.
Yeah, there are also coaches who I think just got tired of all the landscape and stuff. Like
for
Tony
sure.
Bennett.
Yeah,
Jim Larinaga and, you know.
And Jay Wright and some other guys who were just like, I'm not going to do it. Bill Self has never indicated an unwillingness to be a part of the NIL era.
Sure. Of course. I'm not saying, I wonder if 2 years from now, they're still struggling. He can't figure out the portal and whatnot. I wonder if he, to Gold's point, instead of being fired, just can be like, you know what? It's just time, you know, and I'm just done with it because I'm not able to figure out. And if I'm not going to be a top tier coach in the country, which I feel I'm not right now, then I'm just going to be done.
I'm just wondering if it would be like from internal pressure as well. Like, you're right. I don't know that the headline exists of Bill Self canned at Kansas exists. But do I think that there's a possibility that it's like, you know, like, he's decided to retire, but like we find out internally that they were like, Bill, Games passed you by.
Yeah.
I still think it would take five full bad years to get there. I was just curious in the conversation because we just saw another kind of like KC area legend go down.
All right, let's go to the NFL where they're having their league meetings. There's another set of meetings happening in May. But the number one headline out of this is what's going to happen with the tush push. We all know it's been debated for a couple years now. The Eagles are better than anybody ever in NFL history at doing it. It's a lot of reasons for that. I think Jalen Hurts is the biggest because from a strength perspective, no other quarterback has the lower body strength that Jalen Hurts has. And you've had back and forth on like, hey, why should you ban it? Is it just because teams are jealous that they can't do it as effective? You've had multiple coaches this week come out and blame injuries, even though there's no real injury risk. And then some have said, or injury data yet. Some have said, well, we got to do it before it becomes a problem. And it's this weird back and forth. Today, they made a decision to table it, meaning they didn't have enough votes either. Like, there weren't enough votes to go and actually vote.
They want to keep pushing to get it banned, but they don't have enough
so
people.
We will revisit this again in May. But for the time being, the tush push is still legal, at least for another 2 months or another month, I guess now.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that they're going to try to make another push here. There's another meeting in May. Some other things got tabled for May too. One vote just straight up failed, which was the illegal contact holding not be an automatic first down, even on a 5-yard penalty.
Right, but this one is the strongest debate. I mean, Pete Schrager, who just left NFL Network, he now works for ESPN, I guess, or will eventually work for ESPN. He said he heard the tush-push debate among the teams of the rare rule change where both sides are not only dug in and very passionate, but there are influential voices making cases to potentially swing votes on both sides of the debate. This is the story of the week. So this is not a normal rule change vote. This one people are taking personally because if you're the Eagles, you're saying, wait a second here. Versus, you know, the other side of it where, you know, like the Packers are the team that proposed this. They're an NFC squad. They, you know, they're more likely to play the Eagles and have to deal with that. You've got, Kellen Moore, who was on the Eagles staff, who's now the head coach of the Saints. He has no problem with it. You got Andy Reid, who I think has kind of played both sides a little bit with his comments.
He's
trying not to ruffle any feathers.
He's like, I'll choose whatever sides you guys tell me to choose.
Basically.
Sean McVay had said that he straight up told Sirianni he was being a hater, but also doesn't want the play. Here's the problem I have with the way they're trying to get rid of the rule. They might not be successful because right now the reports are they got about half the league owners on board to get rid of half the competition, half the teams on board to get rid of it. And they got to convince the other half or at least another probably third of that grouping to figure out how to convince them that we should also get rid of it. I hate, for the Eagles' sake and for any team's sake, because if this was a rule that the Chiefs were taking advantage of, I wouldn't like that they are trying to convince everyone to do it under the guise of player safety. Because, and I want to be very clear about this, the player safety reports on this matter are, and I cannot emphasize this enough, not out. So claiming it is a safety issue when there straight up isn't data out on it at all is pretty lame, right? You're like, it's a player safety issue. And you're like, under what conditions are you sure it is a player safety issue? Gut? Just your vibes and feeling that maybe a player has to get lower? That ain't good enough. We do research in this league. We get actual. Now, look, if they ever get a report that comes back that says you're more likely to get hurt on this play than another play, they'll have no trouble getting rid of it. None. The reason why they're getting pushed back now is they're trying to get everybody else to just go off feelings. And that's a tough reason to get rid of a rule.
Clearly, though, this is a highly debated one. So this is not there are plenty of people, obviously, in the league that are involved in the competition committee as well that feel it should be banned. And what are their motives? I don't know if we would ever get a true answer from everybody involved. I've told you from 2 years ago or whatever, the very beginning, in general, just as a sports fan, it's a boring ass play, and I just don't like watching it. Right? Like,
great reason to say to get rid of it, but I get the logic. It's not the worst reason.
Yeah. Like, there are other plays that are boring, but I would say that for a sport that is all about TV ratings and cares more about that than actually even player safety as well.
I
totally have, like, if you told me today they would have announced they banned it, I would have been like, great. I would have had no problem. It is a boring play. Third and one, and I know what's coming. And it's not just because the Eagles can convert it and nobody can. It's just, it's even when they convert it, it's a boring play. Just like I wouldn't want to watch a bunch of games with kneel downs or QB sneaks either. Like, those are boring plays in the sport. We like passing. We like Saquon Barkley breaking off long runs. And the Eagles, I have no fault to them. They're taking advantage of something that is legal, and they're great at it. No problem with what they're doing. It's a boring play. And so if that is part of my thought process on it, does it need to be banned? I don't know.
The other part about it, I guess, for the strong defenders of it, everybody realizes, right, that this used to be a banned play. So what's the difference between going back? You didn't used to be able to push people. And I got to be honest, this sounds stupid. This is going to be the smallest little thing. How come I can push you but not pull? If I'm changing your momentum either way, what's the difference? Why the hell can't I just drag you across the line? And it's always in the same, like, what's, like, if I'm allowed to handle your momentum in one way or the other, then why can't I get rid of it? Look, I'm not like overly against or for, like, if they keep it, I don't care. If they get rid of it, fine. Like, I'm not going to be like heartbroken that there's no more tush push in the league, right? It'll be fine that it is no longer here. It does feel like they're making a rule specifically to hurt one team.
And it would hurt one team more than anybody else. That's true.
It is pretty rare, I feel like, that we enter a rule set where they're trying to do something to distinguish one team. For instance, a team was trying to do this for themselves. The Detroit Lions today had a vote voted down. It did not pass. They wanted to eliminate, as I had mentioned, the holding or legal contact penalties from being an automatic first down. You're like, well, that's interesting. I wonder why it is the Lions would like to get rid of that. Well, since 2022, no team, and by a mile, has been called for more penalties of that nature than the Detroit Lions. They were like, we would like the league rules to be nice for us. So, like, I could understand, like, that would be, you know, like, I could see why the Eagles would be like, hey, you're going to get rid of something just because we're good at it? That seems kind of shady. The overtime rules technically affect all 32 teams in the league. It seemed kind of crybaby that the Bills were the team that ended up getting those rules changed. But, like, I don't know. It feels very, like, targeted. That's maybe my bigger issue with it. It feels like they're all out to get the Eagles. You're right, though. It's not a fun play to watch. And I know it's, like, the simple thing to be like, well, just keep them at a 3rd-and-1. Well, it's a lot easier said than done. They're one of the best offenses in the league. I appreciate it. But, you know, until the league figures out a way to stop it, like, can I jump over the top of the line again? Can we at least give me an option to slow this thing down, or we're just done here?
So in May, they have a meeting again, and that's where we'll probably get some final determination. They could also still table it again till the following season and hold off one more. But the reason why they didn't even go to a vote is because they knew they didn't have the votes. And that happens all the time with this kind of stuff. So,
but they table it if they still think they could get the votes later.
And it was weird because 24 hours ago, the expectation was that this thing was going to get banned. Then this morning, Jordan Schultz, who had the report on this, said that it was leaning towards not being able to get banned, which turns out to be accurate, that they didn't have the votes. So something shifted, and this is why everybody's trying to talk each other into it. There's plenty of conversations. It would be fascinating if we, you know, to have a film crew and, like, once this is all done, and find out who was so vocal and what the actual arguments were and how upset did some owner or member of the competition committee get with another member based off of how it may or may not hurt them. But tush push is still around at least for another month. We'll get to some of the other things that did pass a little bit later on in the show, because there were a couple changes, including overtime. Kickoff one was, we saw that coming back in preseason and two weeks into the regular season, that they needed to adjust the touchback rule. But up next, let's get back to some Royals baseball. A couple encouraging starts. But who's had the most encouraging start out of two offensive players? We'll get into that. And what else the NFL is deciding to do, which this one I think is terrible for fans that like to go to games, which is a lot of you. That's next.